It is Saturday, August 9th, 2008, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on GeekSpeak, the Week in Geek News, and your questions and comments of technology.
The bandwidth for GeekSpeak.org is provided by GNI, GNIHosting.com.
Welcome to GeekSpeak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KOSP or its board, the Pataphysical Broadcasting Foundation. Today on GeekSpeak, we're covering the Week in Geek News, and the second half, we're taking your calls with questions and comments of technology. Questions and comments about technology, in fact. The phone numbers to call us during the second half of the show are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or go to geekspeak.org and send us email right now. Of course, you can also participate on our forums at geekspeak.org, where we help you all week long with your technical problems. This is GeekSpeak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are geeks Ben Jaffe, Slacker, and Meteor Dude.
Morning.
Actually, you're kind of a teacher at Stanford, so that's not really slacking. But speaking of slacking, Miles Elam, student programmer and political junkie.
Good morning.
And the busiest guy I know, Sean Cleveland, technical marketing manager at NVIDIA. In fact, senior technical marketing manager. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning. Busiest, huh?
I think so. You definitely work the most for your job of the people that I interact with.
I work hard for my money.
That's right.
Baby.
Let me throw it on a music track for that.
Actually, next week is going to be hard week.
It's always
this
a week
hard was
week.
Actually a good week.
You know...
Not actually, that. It wasn't. You know why?
Why?
Because they moved me to a new building with half-height cubicles in an open environment and a desk that's too narrow for my hardware. And I feel like everyone's looking over my shoulder all the time. But then they're not, because they all feel like everyone's looking over their shoulder. And if anybody talks, even across the room, I can hear them. And it's so annoying.
You know, one of my greatest experiences in a working environment was a half-cube room with Miles, actually. Do you remember that space at FTM, at Feed the Monster? That was a cool environment. But we were all working on the same stuff. Like, we were all the same skill set. Miles and I were the senior developers, and then there was all these other developers. And we could, anytime something was brought up, it was interesting to all of us. It made sense. But in your stuff, I can't imagine it being effective. In any case, since we're talking about...
You know what? It's not the open environment that bugs me so much. It's just that the lack of space for hardware testing.
You like hardware, huh? I understand. Well, you can bring all your hardware to my house and we can work on it.
Well, part of my job is just supporting all of the latest hardware. Mm-hmm. So I keep a bunch of different systems running in case somebody, like press, have issues. And that takes up a lot of space.
Okay, speaking of press and NVIDIA, a ridiculous story got posted by some blogger.
No, actually, it was not a blogger. It was DigiTimes.
Isn't DigiTimes
in Asia.
It's a press
they're
thing.
They're big.
Oh. But what was the story? Well, let me be the synopsis of the story. The story was that this news agency thought that NVIDIA was stopping their chipset development.
Yeah, they got a
which
piece
is a
of...
major part of NVIDIA's company.
Or rather, they were saying, okay, well, this motherboard manufacturer isn't going to have this NVIDIA chipset. This motherboard manufacturer doesn't have one, it turns out, yet.
Well, actually, there's that too, but they're different.
Right, but I mean,
stories.
Like a lot of categorization of look, the chipset isn't showing up.
But,
so they made a generalization,
and they didn't check with NVIDIA. Right. So what were you going to say though?
Well, DigiTimes out and out said that NVIDIA is getting out of the chipset business,
which is ludicrous.
And then the Enquirer ran a story, which is kind of a trash rag out of UK, about that were some of our chipsets aren't being sold by some motherboard manufacturers. And the truth is those chipsets were sold. Not in the consumer space. They were not in the channel.
Right.
You know, so nobody ever saw those to begin with. And one of the motherboard manufacturers was going to release a board. They never did.
Well, I didn't really
so
want
it's
to
not like they pulled them off the market. Yeah. Well, people really put these things together and said, oh, you know, NVIDIA's got no Intel chipsets for the foreseeable future, which is not true either. But we actually said we're not going to support Intel's next generation Nehalem CPU with their QuickPath interconnect because that's going away. So why put all these resources into supporting a technology that's going to be replaced by something in a year?
So you could argue that there was a little bit of confusion in the market space, and there's a little bit of status for this. But the bigger story for me is that a company made a claim without doing the research,
and
then everybody covered it.
They never called us. They never did any follow-up with other partners, and then everybody picked it up, especially bloggers.
And the thing is, it's definitely the blogger pickup that worked. That's the thing. Because if a major journal in the U.S. would have picked it up, they would have first called NVIDIA to check the story before they published anything.
Yeah.
So that's
and
just
a lot
a general,
of them did.
It's just a general thing that you do as press. Yeah. But in a situation
it's so easy. It's not investigative journalism. That's just, what's the number for NVIDIA in the yellow pages? Or
on the website. Yeah.
On the website. And call them up and ask, is it true you're... No.
So do you think this story...
So a number of journalists did call us when they saw that story and said, hey, what's going on? You know, like Ryan from PC Perspective. Guy's always good about following up on his stories. You know, called us right away and said, what's going on? And then he posted a story, with
clarity.
What's really going on. Yeah, because he talked to a bunch of different people. So so some people do that sort of investigative journalism. And you gotta go... make sure you get your news from a source that you trust.
See, I don't even consider that investigative journalism. Investigative journalism is digging into it. This is more just fact-checking. These days, it's based-level
journalism.
Yeah.
Fact-checking.
Well, so here's the thing is that you just mentioned someone. Who was it that actually
Ryan Shrout.
Ryan Shrout.
PC Perspective, yeah.
So does PC – and he's a blogger. And does PC –
No, he's got a full site, full review site. He's one of
there's a question of where – you know, I mean, he does get revenue probably from advertising on his site. And is he a blogger or a magazine? And they're getting cloudy to determine which is which. But the important part is that you know you can trust him because you read him a lot and he does good work.
Yeah.
And that's where it comes down to how do you know in an online world what's reliable information?
Yeah.
And I don't think I've got a good answer for that except for to kind of know your sources and then check competitive ideas and see who makes the stronger argument. So when a New York Times posts something or a major newspaper, you know it's to some degree it's reliable. But you don't know that with a blog unless you're reading it a lot.
Yep.
Anyway, I thought it was an interesting story. Thanks, Sean, for clarifying that with us. Let's go on with news. Ben, what's going on in space or lack of space travel?
Space. So there is this company called SpaceX, and it's basically trying to commercialize space travel and offer flights into space or at least into
orbit.
Orbit for $200,000 or something like that. And they've had their third rocket failure in a row. And there were some satellites on board, and there were also the ashes of Jimmy Doohan, who many of you know played
Scotty
from Star Trek, and
also another astronaut whose ashes was on there.
Yeah, Cooper, James John.
So those
Cooper.
Ashes got destroyed.
Yeah, it got destroyed during the launch and everything. Yeah.
Jimmy Doohan's ashes.
Yeah.
That's all he wanted was to have his ashes spread in space.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
I wonder how high up they went. I mean, some will get into space if we got high enough in space.
I actually met him at a comic convention, and he was signing his picture for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that he was missing his middle finger. And I had to ask. I said, I'm sorry, Mr. Doohan. I got to know. How did you lose your middle finger? And he says, I lost this on D-Day in World War II.
No way.
He was actually, he was on Omaha Beach. He was on one of the side beaches. Yeah.
So he hit it?
So he actually fought in World War II. And he was there at Battle D-Day, and that's where he lost his middle finger.
I don't think I knew that he was missing his middle finger. How did he...
I want to go back
into old Star Trek episodes and start looking.
What's he doing with his middle finger?
It's like Radar O'Reilly in MASH, you know.
Left or right hand?
I think it was his right hand. Yeah,
they hit that very well.
Radar O'Reilly on MASH had an arm that was not fully formed.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And he hit it really well in the show.
Magic television.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
By always holding a clipboard.
Or something. Yeah, the way you just watch closely,
and
you'll see it.
If Scotty had been there, I don't think the rocket would have crashed.
Because he would have fixed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. He always fixed it.
It's a miracle worker.
Right.
You know what, though? He didn't need a rocket. Somebody's going to beam his ashes up. They'll figure it out someday.
Yeah.
We found Scotty's ashes.
He definitely was the beamer king, huh?
Mm-hmm.
That transporter sure did have a lot of issues over the years.
It did. You know, I don't want to get that much into Star Trek. We can get into Star Trek lore when we get another guest on that knows a lot about it. Okay, let's
go. We should have a Star Trek show.
Yes, of course we will.
Someday.
Every day at my house I do Star Trek shows. I know you're really good with Star Trek, aren't you?
Yeah.
All right, let's go ahead and go to I think we'll go to Miles's story about Apple's iPhone, if you don't mind.
Well, it's actually an application, not the iPhone itself. Okay. Apple has an app store that you can, if you're a developer, pay your $99 and put your application up for pay or for free. And one took advantage of this to sell an application for as much as was allowed by the App Store. In other words, $999.99.
Well, this application, what did this application do?
Yeah, this application did nothing. Absolutely nothing. All it did was you press it, it launched, and it shows a picture of a ruby gem with a red flare effect behind it.
A $900 image, basically.
Right. Okay. The application is called I Am Rich.
How many people bought it?
8 people. 6 people in the U.S., 1 in Germany, 1 in France.
And they spent $999.
Yes. And
that's sick.
Normally, developers are paid at the end of each month, whatever revenue is gained from that application. And the person who wrote this app did not receive their check this month. So trying to figure out what's going on there. Apple removed the app within 24 hours.
How did that get approved? Because Apple approves all the applications that go in, I thought.
We don't know because Apple won't tell anyone what their process is.
What the rules are.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, you'll submit your app. Apple will come back saying, well, this doesn't fit this. This doesn't get the guidelines right for this or doesn't fit our criteria for that. But they don't actually have a document that lists the guidelines that you can just follow the list, go through the checklist, and then submit and be okay.
Interesting.
And, yeah, so.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Miles, for that update on people spending ridiculous amounts of money for nothing. How sad. whose turn is it? Sean's turn, I believe. Let's cover eyeballs, if you don't mind.
I haven't read that story.
Ben, sorry. What's going on with this eyeball thing?
Okay.
You didn't read it either?
I read it. Right. I'm not well-versed on it. But,
Hang on a second.
I can summarize it.
All right, go ahead and summarize.
Okay, the quick summary is you've got this, usually if you're trying to capture wide angle shots like for security cameras or I don't know if skateboard videos, fisheye lenses and you know that kind of stuff, you have to use optics to map this wide field, this wide angle field onto a rectangular CCD chip,
which is
flat and it captures all of that image data and converts it and you know whatnot, but some researchers made a round CCD chip. I don't think it worked on the exact same premise as a CCD chip, but basically it's a curved surface much like an eyeball, and that allows it to capture that image data without distortion, without losing pixels, without having to do calculations or having complex.
So they're actually putting the sensors onto a round surface.
Yes. Though this camera was only 16 pixels by 16 pixels, so they've got quite a way to go. but at least they did make that move forward to try to do it, and it's actually a really neat idea.
I wonder if anyone ever did this in traditional photography, you know, take a piece of smooth glass and put on material. I mean, it would be a very expensive
shot, yeah,
of course.
Extremely.
But with electrical sensors, it does make sense to try to emulate more how the human
and
eye
how
would
you develop it.
Because the human eye does have curved sensors. In
exactly.
The back of our eyeball.
Yeah. Or it has sensors on a curved surface. Yeah.
Sorry. Yes. Okay.
To be accurate.
All right. Thank you very much, Ben, for that story about emulating eyeballs with computers. Next news story. Who wants it? Sean, what you got?
Have you guys heard of the IBM X-Force research and development team? IBM X-Force?
No.
Just not from you.
They do security systems research. their goal is to discover, analyze, monitor, and record a wide array of computer security threats and vulnerabilities. Well, their 2008 mid-year report shows Apple displacing Microsoft in number of vulnerabilities, which I thought was really interesting.
Wait, who has more vulnerabilities?
Apple has more vulnerabilities.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand. What did you say? That's really interesting.
So Apple has disclosed more vulnerabilities than Microsoft or any other vendor.
Wow.
So according to this mid-year report, Apple is achieving a vulnerability disclosure score of 3.2%, followed by Joomla which is 2.7%, and then Microsoft at 2.5%.
Joomla's a blog engine or a content management system.
Yeah, they just introduced what's called CPE, a common platform enumeration, into their database, mm-hmm. which introduced PHP-based Joomla, WordPress, and Drupal into right. their top 10, right. like right away.
Interesting. Well, I'm curious to why we don't see more exploits being taken advantage of than on the Apple
environment. Yeah, I was really hoping Alex would maybe he'll respond.
All right, we'll wait a little bit for Alex to do
maybe,
that.
Maybe he's not on.
I want to cover a little story. I think a few times I've mentioned that my wife and I don't have cable television in our house because we're radio people, but we do like a few shows, and so for a while we were buying through iTunes. The Colbert Report and the Daily Show.
So what's the quality like on that?
Amazing. Better than television broadcast. Really good quality. Yeah. So, and we've been trying to find a cheaper version because it actually cost a bit of money. I can't remember what it was, but you buy like 14, you buy a month worth of episodes and it's for a certain amount, $9, something like that. In any case, so we've been looking for a cheaper solution. And finally, I took a look at Hulu. It's HULU.com.
I'm sorry, I'm a little confused. You were paying for The Daily Show, even though they give it for free on dailyshow.com?
Yeah, well, we did switch to that when they started covering full episodes. The free we covered, when we covered it, I don't know, okay. 6 months ago, we did switch to that. But it wasn't as easy to use. But in any case, Hulu.com is far superior. They are taking the feed from that site, and they're putting their own commercials in it. And the commercials are actually not as horrible. Most of these online commercials are just bad quality things. Like you see for, you know, an hour's episode, you see the same commercial over and over again of a violent video game that you weren't interested the first time watching it and you've watched it multiple times. Anyway, I highly suggest if you want to check out downloading videos for free or watching movies online for free, Hulu. It's actually not downloaded, it's streaming, Hulu.com. Okay. Next news story, who wants it?
Isn't Hulu run by
Ben, you can ask,
like,
oh, yeah.
Sony or somebody?
I don't know who
big.
Runs it.
I think it's a bunch of really big companies who put that together.
What's the resolution ish of the video on
it
Hulu?
It looks comparable to television.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, I put it on to. So my Windows machine that I'm watching this with has an S video out, and that goes to my TV, and I watch it on the TV. Yeah.
Nice.
So according to Wikipedia, Hulu is a website that offers free, high quality streaming video of TV shows and movies, primarily from NBC and Fox.
Yeah. It's definitely television that you're seeing. It's not a lot of other things. And they add commercials
in. It's flash video format. A little higher resolution than the bitrate that offered by YouTube.
Yeah, it's definitely higher vision.
Yeah,
higher quality than YouTube.
So, how do you feel about watching ads again?
It's not that great. But the thing is, you can't skip them. I mean, it would be very hard for me to hack something to skip it. But we, you know, don't really watch them. We take our break there. You do other things,
just like it used to be.
Yeah, and they're quick too, like 10-second commercials.
Okay,
so it's not a big deal.
It's not bad.
No. Anyway, if you're into that kind of TV thing, which I'm not that into, but. Miles?
Something near and dear to my heart. When signing on for a company, a lot of times they will make you sign a non-compete agreement to say that you're not going to go immediately to a competitor. Well, it turns out that the California State Supreme Court has rejected non-compete clauses. Out of whole cloth, just they're all invalid. If you ever signed one, doesn't matter, you can ignore it.
When you work for a company and then you're going to leave the company and you've signed a contract that said you'll never work in that space again for a certain period of time.
It's usually for about 2 years
right.
or something like that.
Then you can.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yes.
All right.
It doesn't mean that you can take any trade secrets or any type of company secrets along with you or like divulge them to your new employer.
So are you going to make a spam filtering application?
No. There's quite a few people already in that space already. But.
And Sean, you 2 years ago, were you working for Transmeta, or you've been working for NVIDIA that long, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, okay.
Yeah. I do remember working for a document imaging company, though, and thinking, like, oh, what? No, I can't do it. Even if I wanted to create my own company and start that, I couldn't because of a 2-year non-compete clause.
Right.
Yeah, it's mostly for engineers.
Well, actually, this case was not about an engineer. It was about a CPA. A CPA who worked for Anderson Consulting, who, after the big blow up with Enron, went to go work with another company and was told that he could work for the other company as long as he dropped all future claims against Arthur Anderson or against Anderson Consulting in exchange for being able to work someplace else. So instead of signing this agreement and having a non-compete, he refused and sued and alleged interfering with future economic interests. And now he has won. And a lot of the rest of us now have a new option open to us. And a lot of companies, I'm sure, are going to go back through the non-compete clauses and figure out what they're going to do about it.
Right.
You know, Sean, I noticed that your story that we just covered about Apple displaces Microsoft, it says the title of it's Apple displaces Microsoft in patch reports. Does that mean Apple's releasing more patches for their vulnerabilities?
Oh, I must have gotten the title wrong.
No, it's in the Business Center, and that's what it is.
Or that are just so many.
It doesn't cover that in the news story. I'm just curious, like, what, how much these are patched. And I really, it's amazing to me that Joomla, which is this content management system for websites, has such a high rating. I mean, think that you wouldn't have that many exploits on a PHP application.
Wait, what language is it written in?
PHP.
Yeah.
Hey, at least the site doesn't crash every other day.
That's true.
Mr. Cocoon Tomcat supporter. I'm referring to the GeekSpeak website. Yeah, if you ever go to the GeekSpeak website and there's no text, email Miles. What's our next news story? Who wants it?
I can do it.
Okay, go for it.
So I want to talk about virophages, which are...
The virus.
Yeah. So bacteriophages are viruses that infect bacteria, right? And at the CNRS UPR laboratories in Marseille, they have found a virophage, which... the quick backstory is... they discovered this thing called a Mimi virus, mm-hmm. which is just basically a huge virus, like 3 to 4 times the size of known viruses.
And they classified this incorrectly the first time. They discovered it
in the 90s, and they thought it was a microbe, and so they threw it in the freezer. And 10 years later, they took it out and realized, oh my gosh, this is a virus.
Now, it would be really cool is if they named it Virosaurus Rex. That would just be... That would get people interested.
You know, when we ever cover biological stuff, I wish we kept Don on the air, because I'd love to ask her, like, the definition of a virus is it's something that doesn't look like it's alive until it interacts with other cells. Mm-hmm. Like, is that the definition? It's something like that.
It does not have all the properties of life unless it's...
It's intact. Yeah. Attached,
well,
right?
in the silly names thread, there's the Mimi virus, and then they found a larger one, which they called the Mama virus. But... In any case, they found out that this Mimi virus was a virus, and the way it works is it creates this huge virus factory that spits out viral code, DNA code, and whatnot. And they found this smaller virus, which they named Sputnik, which infects the Mimi virus.
That's all it does.
It just hangs out and it infects.
What does it do to the Mimi virus?
It makes it spit out malformed code and.
And reproduces itself, I'm assuming.
I'm assuming it can't reproduce itself until the Mimi virus goes to someplace else, because the Mimi virus can't do anything
until the Mimi virus attaches to a cell. So the Mimi virus attaches to a cell, it becomes a active virus and starts reproducing different things. And then this other virus mm-hmm. attaches to it.
Yes.
And changes it to make it copies of itself.
Yes. So in a sense, the virus, the Mimi virus, actually gets sick.
Yeah. You know, every time we talk about biological viruses, I am shocked at how similar they are to computer viruses.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see someone producing a really good exploit that went across a lot of machines and installed some kind of thing, and then somebody else coming along and producing a virus for that exploit.
Well, that's been done. Some people actually code viruses which will infect systems that are infected to uninfect them.
Right.
To take out other viruses.
And legally, it's been a very slippery slope. Dark gray area.
Right. You don't want to say that you're doing this.
Yeah.
All right.
And so it brings up the idea that what do we think is living? Are viri living? And then, of course, bringing it to the technological
sector.
Viri,
huh?
Are viruses? Viri? Isn't it viri?
I think it is viri, yeah.
Yeah. See? So there, Lyle.
A teacher who's at Stanford. Come on.
I'll look it up while you're chatting.
No, it's okay. Hey, I want to mention that... GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. You are welcome to call us up and ask us questions. Anything you'd like, we'll take your calls with computer questions. Any questions. We're really good at answering questions.
Yeah, Dr. Ramirez also has a good music library.
He does?
And noise canceling headsets.
That's true. Are you going? Are you there again? That's cool.
I should. Yeah, it's one of those expenses, you know.
Yeah,
you just can't. It's a big one for
me.
Anyway,
this morning you said you couldn't buy coffee. Come on, man.
Well, I had no cash in my pocket.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that, you're supposed to say it's okay. I'll buy coffee for you, but you didn't.
So. I made you coffee. I made you delicious espresso.
You did, yeah.
Okay.
All right, I take it
over. Hey, if you want to give us a call with about questions about espresso, the phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, the phone number is 1-800-655-5877. And the phone number in 831 area code is 476-2800. And we got calls coming in right away, but don't let that stop you. Of course, you can ask us questions online as well if you would like. Stay with KOSP for Castle Cottage this morning at 11 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. Mr. Cleveland. Mr. Elam. Ben, how's it going? Yeah. Oh, that's right.
The plural of viruses is not... Or plural
it's
viruses.
Viruses.
Yeah, it's not viri.
Oh,
so making fun of
oh my gosh.
He said it. Yeah.
Two of the three of us are on the plural of virus Wikipedia page, which has its own large page with etymology.
Well, we actually typed in plural of virus into Google, and we got a page called plural of virus at Wikipedia. And
it's not just the virus
page.
Wait,
do you have Googlepedia installed?
It's the plural of virus page.
Oh, see, Sean didn't need to go to Wikipedia. First off, I'm Lyle Troxell, Sean Cleveland, Ben Jaffe, and Miles Elam. That's all of us. Sean, what's Googlepedia? Because we covered it before, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's an add-on for Firefox that splits your search results page so that you get your Google search results on the left and a Wikipedia page on the right. But they don't always match up.
Yeah,
I killed my Firefox
because
I have 200 tabs open.
But it's not, you know, it doesn't really slow things down, and I like it.
Yeah, I think it's cool. Okay, so the plural of virus again, and let's be clear. Ben said a second ago it was what, and then I teased him. He said viri.
Viri.
And I said, ha-ha, and I joked about you, and then what?
And then I went to Ben's defense, and turns out I was wrong, too.
Wow, so Lyle and Ben were wrong.
Okay,
I think we just learned
it's August
that Lyle has an ego.
Well, the thing is, I'm wrong most of the time.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, Lyle is finally right, because anything else he has ever written or any show he's ever done, he's made some egregious mistake.
Lyle, dyslexic a little.
Can I just say that? Can I just say, though no major dictionary recognizes viri and viri with two I's, Wikipedia does recognize it as a variation that no dictionary recognizes.
Right, because Wikipedia is by a whole bunch of people, and a lot of people get it wrong.
Mm-hmm. So
then again, what is language? What is language?
I was going to say, this
if
could
it's
change.
Just a lot of people say something.
I control the slider, so I think I'm right. So there you go. What? I'm sorry. What was it?
You know, Lyle, your grammar is actually really good. It's just your spelling, and it's better to be that way.
Are you patronizing me?
No, that's good. My wife has dyslexia, too. Same thing.
Right, his grammar is fine.
It's just the spelling.
His vocabulary is pretty atrocious, too.
Questions of technology.
You can't help that.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's go ahead and take a call from Capitola. Barry, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, my name is Barry.
Hi, Barry. Welcome.
Thanks. I'm calling because I'm trying to find a cell phone that's going to be compatible and that'll sync with my iTunes and my contact, everything for a Mac.
Uh-huh.
The only thing I know that's really working these days is the iPhone. It doesn't seem like any of the phone companies are supporting any phones that are Mac compatible.
There are smartphones that have a, what's the smartphone, like something 40? Do you know what I'm talking about, Miles?
Samsung is supposed to be the biggest
I had a Nokia phone, and my wife has one too, and I can't remember the number on it.
Oh, it's probably like an S80.
No, it's I can't recall the shape of it. But
the software
fine.
That's on there is S40, S60, S80.
Yeah, so what you want to look for is a smartphone with a series of S40, S80.
But they won't sync directly to iTunes, though. That was something I was asking
iTunes.
About. Yeah,
so actually, no, maybe not iTunes, but I was just looking for my contacts.
Your contacts and address and a calendar.
Calendar.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been able to sync no problem with it. It's got Bluetooth, and it's these smartphones. What
I have an iPhone now, but my previous Nokia candy bar, the 6230.
Yeah.
That one you can get software to be able to sync up. There are a lot of phones that
and Apple actually has the software. I mean, it
right.
Will recognize
look for iSync
yeah.
and the compatible phones to iSync.
So Apple has a product called iSync, which is kind of built into the Mac, and
right.
it has a whole bunch of supported phones. And pretty much if it's got Bluetooth, And it's Nokia. I think it will do this. I mean, it's really quite impressive how
Nokia, they even showed Sony Ericssons.
Yeah, they even show the icon of the phone built into iSync. So you do not need an iPhone. Of course, they might stop supporting this so more people buy iPhones. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I had the I had a Sony Ericsson with my older plan, the T616, and it was just it worked great. And then when they upgraded, AT&T upgraded to the new plan, there is a couple of Sony Ericssons. I really didn't want to go with the smartphone. I'm just not interested in using the internet on my phone. And AT&T does not have any phones that they are selling that are
not smartphones that do that. Well, the thing is, so I was using a smartphone and I wasn't using internet on it. I just didn't access the internet with it. It was still just a functional phone.
I have a Sony Ericsson Z750A, and that actually works with iSync. But actually, I've been it makes me sad the support that iSync has for different phones. And there's actually a guy out there, Feisar, F-E-I-S-A-R, or I'm botching that pronunciation, but he has a whole bunch of iSync plugins for all these different phones, and they cost like really they're very cheap. And what I actually did is I went to the AT&T store and I brought my phone and I brought my computer and I tried to sync to all these different models. And it took half an hour, but I managed to weed through the Bluetooth-enabled
that
were cheap.
What phone did you buy?
I ended up getting the Z750A, but that one actually didn't work in the store, but I borrowed their internet and found out that there is a plugin. So,
and then you went and bought that plugin?
They have their own internet?
They're very, very cheap plugins. But yeah, they do have their own internet that you can't use, but you can go around. It's one of those weird things. You can tell the guy what to click on their terminal, but you can't touch it because it's against
policy and all that stuff.
But anyway.
Well, Barry, I hope that helps. Yeah. And will you put the link? We'll send the link in so I can put it on the website. Yeah. Thanks, Ben. Hey, thanks, Barry, for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck on phone.
All right. And BlackBerry, too.
Oh, BlackBerry does sync, too.
Yeah.
And mine's not a smartphone. I don't use internet. The only thing I do is calendar and address book. And it works very well.
Now sometimes.
Okay. Well, I do text, but as far as syncing goes.
Thanks, Barry.
Thank you.
Let's go to Watsonville. In Watsonville, Robert has called us. Hi, Robert. Welcome.
I'm using Nero's NCD compression software, and every time I try to format a DVD rewritable disc, I get the blue screen of death.
Uh-oh.
And I was wondering if you know of any alternatives to Nero NCD for backup that's more reliable.
Have you successfully burned with that burner?
Previously, yes. I did for a long time, 4 or 5 years, and now all of a sudden I'm getting a blue screen of death.
So there's an application called ISO Burner, which is a really... Are you using
It only does ISOs.
Yeah, ISO recorder.
That's okay, but are you using XP, Windows XP?
Yes.
So what I would do is go ahead and take Nero and create an ISO very simple of anything, and then go ahead and take ISO, what is it called? ISO Creator?
Well, ISO Recorder.
ISO Recorder, and try to record.
It won't work. ISO Recorder only supports DVDs in the Vista version.
Okay, I got XP.
Well, because the only thing I'm thinking is that you actually have a hardware problem that's causing the blue screen.
Well,
I looked online and
checked the error codes and stuff, and it seems like the tray is opening and closing at the same time with several applications or something. Several things are trying to get the DVD door drive open. And close at the same time.
You know what I would do is make sure you get the most recent drivers for that DVD burner.
Yeah, here's what you do. Go to Start menu and go to Run and type msconfig, like Microsoft config, msconfig, and go to the Start tab and turn off all the stuff that's running in the background. So if you've got applications that are running in the background that are accessing your DVD drive or making things really difficult to use your computer, just disable those. You don't need to run those. And then you'll have to reboot after you do that. And something else you might want to do is look up the model number of your drive. You should be able to go to the hardware properties on your drive letter in Windows Explorer and find out what the model number is. If that doesn't work, you can always pop the drive out and look at the label on it. But get the latest firmware for your drive.
Right.
Because they fix a lot of issues like this with software. With Nero, they say they add support for different types of media. And the dyes they use. And they actually make things a little more stable and sometimes increase the burn speeds of drives. So always get your latest firmware. And, of course, what version of Nero are you running?
6, but I'm buying 8 and trying to uninstall and reinstall.
You know, Maximum PC just ran this really I think it's online. If you go to MaximumPC.com, they just talked about why you don't need Nero or Roxio and free software alternatives. And
what's
I just,
it called?
It's go to MaximumPC.com.
MaximumPC.com.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they posted a story on this recently. I know it's in their one of their last issues, but you know, I'll do some research.
We'll put it on the website.
I'll talk to Gordon this week. He's an editor at MaxPC and a friend of mine, and I'll get their recommendations and post them by next Saturday.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, blue screens of death is so frustrating because you know you think you might have fixed it, and then you got to recycle your entire machine when it runs into it. It's one of those things.
Yeah.
Not
so one thing you can do is just stop running the stuff in the background.
Yeah, because typically quit everything else.
Just go into msconfig, and you don't need anything in that startup. You know, if you got virus stuff, you might want to leave that enabled. But while you're doing troubleshooting of your system, just disable it all. And you can always go back and re-enable it. It's something else they could do. Windows XP has Service Pack 3 out. Install that. And if you already did, reinstall that because it'll put all the files back that are supposed to be there in case something else stepped on a file.
That's a good point. Reinstall Windows XP Service Pack 3. Yeah, I finally got an image of Windows XP with Service Pack 3 on it. So now when I'm installing OSs at work, I actually have that on there. It's really nice now I have to upgrade all the patches. From San Ardo, Bill, welcome to GeekSpeak. Hello, Bill.
Hello.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you. I'm having a problem with my computer running Windows 2000.
Windows 2000?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And about a week ago, it did it the first time. It's done it twice. For no apparent reason, the file and edit and view...
Uh-huh.
Menus underneath the title bar suddenly won't work anymore.
Well,
in Windows or an application?
Windows 2000. Oh, yeah.
And it can be in some program I'm running or Internet Explorer.
Anywhere.
What's interesting is some of the title bars, I can grab them and move them down.
Mm-hmm.
And if I move them down approximately 3/4 inch, then the things work again.
Bill, I think that it's time for you to reinstall your operating system.
Oh.
Have you ever reinstalled your operating system?
No.
So you've been using it probably for about 6 years without reinstalling. I'm impressed.
Well, it's been reinstalled, but I didn't do it.
Uh-huh. How long ago?
It was a computer of my son-in-law's, and he gave it to me.
Yeah. I don't know. It could be a video driver. If you're moving minis around and they're popping in and out.
Let's be honest here. Windows 2000 is not getting any security updates. It's not getting any patches.
Yeah, but it's such a good... Of the Windows platforms, it was the most stable until... I don't know if Vista's going to beat it or not, but...
I would agree.
I really like 2000. But you're right. It's well, let's see. It was released in 2001, I think. So it's 7 years old. No, not really. They were late.
Microsoft they started lagging with Windows.
But, I think you really need to consider getting XP on the machine. And if you're not going to do that, reinstalling 2000.
You might want to get the latest service pack.
For 2000?
I bet you have. I bet you don't have the latest code for Windows 2000.
Well,
I think I do.
That's an interesting idea, though. If you get the service pack and just install that, it'll be a lot less of a headache. Even if you already have it, just having it reinstall might fix the problem.
Okay.
You know what? We'll put the link up on our website, geekspeak.org.
And Bill, you said that your son-in-law or something gave it to me, do you?
Yes.
I think you should invite him over for dinner and ask him to help you out.
Well, he lives over 1,000 miles away.
Darn, the flight's not worth it.
No.
You buy a new computer
for that.
It's
a good idea, though.
Did he ship you the computer?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. Uh-huh. Well, thank you, Bill, for the call. Good luck, and do check on geekspeak.org. And as you have trouble, you can always go to our forums and ask us, and we'll help you out.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for the call.
Mm-hmm. And update your graphics drivers.
But for 2000, are there new graphics drivers?
There was a curious comment you made, Lyle, that stuck out for me. You were suggesting moving to XP, and yet Vista is the current version of Windows.
Well, he's got a machine that's too old for Vista.
Might be.
His machine's 7 years old. There's no way it could be Vista.
There's a Windows Vista update tool, and seriously, just look for that. In Google, Windows Vista update tool.
Let's add that to the
website. We'll add that
too.
And you could just run that on your computer, and it'll tell you what it supports and what it doesn't.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
So it's called the Windows X.
I'll make a link to our headlines here.
Okay, sweet.
We'll add it.
All right. We got another call, but if you'd like to call in, because that's our last waiting for us.
It's called Upgrade Advisor. That's it. It's the Upgrade Advisor.
Well, that on the GeekSpeak website. Call us with questions and comments about technology. We will answer any questions, electronics, about, I don't know, how video cameras work. We can do that. We know a bit about Windows. We know a bit about hardware. We know a bit about Macintosh OS. We know a little bit about phones, a little bit about physics. You know, call us anything you'd like. We'll answer your question. The phone number is 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, those numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free anywhere in the U.S., 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. We're going to go ahead and go to Salinas now. Josh, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thanks a lot, guys. I was really interested in the discussion you were having about using iSync with a cell phone, because I really love having my calendar from iCal and my address book be able to be synced onto my telephone. It's kind of like having a Palm Pilot and a cell phone,
absolutely,
but actually using the computer keyboard to deal with everything. I could sit down with my email and kind of make my appointments, and then my phone would remind me when I forgot about them entirely with the alarms, and that was great.
Mm-hmm.
Then my Sony Ericsson died, but even before it died, I was noticing that it wasn't accepting new telephone numbers I entered in my address book on my computer anymore. And I waited a couple of months, and I shopped, just as you said. I looked on the list on the Apple site for iSync-compatible phones. I got this Nokia. It's supposed to iSync, but when I actually got it home and tried to sync it, it didn't work.
And when I
dug around a while, I found out the cause was I was on OS 10.4 instead of 10.5.
Uh-huh. I think that that's probably a misnomer. I would go ahead and take a look at the site that Ben suggested, which is Phrasar. We have it up on the GeekSpeak website right now, and see if they've got a plug-in for your phone that might be able to help you out.
Wait, we do?
I bought a plug-in, and that worked for like a couple of weeks, and I felt really smart, and now it doesn't do anything either.
Really? You might be having a different problem with your system. Mm-hmm. Is the phone being detected by the operating system?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it goes through the whole iSync process, and the wheels turn and stuff.
It just doesn't update everything.
Well, it's not updating really anything right now. I'm not getting phone numbers.
What I would do is delete the phone from the sync system, totally remove it as much as possible, maybe even go into your system, I'm sorry, in your library preferences file and find the sync settings and remove them and add the whole thing back again.
Yeah, you could also remove it from your Bluetooth devices as well and then re-add it. And another thing you could do, if you have all of this stuff synced on your computer and not your phone and you want to get from your computer to your phone, you could do a master reset of your phone. That might fix the issue. And then the other thing that I'd recommend doing before any of this is going into iSync and unchecking the synchronization for contacts and calendars, syncing, and then checking it back again. And that might just clear out.
Josh, I hope these suggestions work for you.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. And of course, if they don't, do participate in our forums. We might be able to help you out further. Thanks for the call.
Great.
All right, let's go ahead and go to Pacific Grove. I always like going to Pacific Grove. Gene, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you, guys. A few weeks ago, you told somebody it's possible to possibly download a YouTube-type video from YouTube using something called Grease Monkey. I have a similar type. Well, I have a question similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
What about websites? There's a website that I really like. Could I download a website to my computer, the whole website, as opposed to just printing off page after page after page and filling it?
Yeah, there's a few applications that allow you to do that. There's command line applications that do that. Miles, do you know of a good app that actually does a scan of a website and keeps downloading that?
I have a Mac, if that makes
Mac?
A difference.
Okay. Yeah. And well, there's a command line. It's actually, you actually have something built into your Macintosh that works, and it's called, is wget built into OS 10? Can you do a search real quick? Might be curl that's there. There's a command line utility. You go into your terminal application, which is under application utilities, and you can run a command.
Curl's on
curl. There. So the application is called curl. That's CURL. It's a little difficult to figure out the exact path parameters, but if you want to get a little geeky, this is how you do it. Go into your terminal application, which is inside under applications utilities. It's called terminal. And in there, just run the command man, space curl, C-U-R-L. It'll give you a whole bunch of information about how curl works. And basically, you're going to tell curl, you're going to go to the directory you want, and you're going to tell curl to download a website, and it'll download it. It's a little complicated. I'd be happy to write up a little how-to on it, because it might be a little easier to do that. Now, there's probably some wrapper applications that allow you to do this. And the thing you're talking about is called crawling a website, I guess. What's the best app search string for that, Miles, for ripping a website down? See, I would just use curl, so don't ever do it. But
I've always used wget, so...
And wget's very similar to curl. Really.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we don't have a
but
good...
But it's been a while since I've done a full screen scrape.
Oh, the other question, though, is, if I did that, I mean, I guess I should worry about how big the website is.
Yeah, you definitely want to worry about that, but there are some settings you can do that will make
unless
it...
Unless a website has a very large database behind it, websites in general aren't that large.
This one is called, what's it called? The Atlas of Plucked Instruments, and he just has pictures of all of them and talks, gives you a little description about every instrument in the world, every plucked instrument, that is.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
I can see it taking a while, but unless you have audio and video on a site, websites tend to be relatively small.
Yeah.
I wouldn't worry about that so much.
Okay, yeah. Great.
All right.
I'll give it a try. Thank you
so much.
Bye.
I remember in my early days of using the internet, I really thought about trying to save stuff and archive stuff. And what I've found is that once it's on the internet, that information doesn't really go away ever. You just have to search for it. And the idea of copying it down, also you might want to try before you go and copy their site, go ahead and go to archive.org and look at the Wayback Machine and see if they've already indexed it. And if they have, that data safe, it'll always be available. Miles, you're going to say?
I was actually thinking that's mostly true, except I've come across a lot of resources that
went
just
away.
Kind of disappeared. Mm. That it, and also came across a bunch of resources that were my own first web pages. Completely forgot to copy them. It'd be great to have them around.
Have you looked at the Wayback Machine?
I actually haven't.
I bet they'll be there. My first website design is on there.
Streaming video and images, especially streaming video, are things that can very
really
easily disappear because they're not very easily archivable.
All right.
But you can't really archive those yourself.
I
want to
cover
either.
One more story, but I don't know if we're going to have time to do it. Well, let's go
quickly. Bob from Aromas wants to upgrade his memory to 4 gigs on XP Home Edition. Kind of a waste of money because XP only supports 2 gigs of memory.
So with XP, don't upgrade.
Well, yeah, you need 64-bit version to really get 4 gig. You'll get more than 2 gig, but not really. Probably closer to 3 gig.
Yeah.
So you're kind of wasting your money. But a lot of modern machines, you want to run dual-channel memory to get the best speed out of it. So putting 3 sticks in, you can do it, not a great thing. But maybe you might want to upgrade
Bob,
to a 64-bit
Bob from
Vista.
Aromas, does that answer your question?
Well, yes and no. I'm thinking about, waiting for the new Microsoft
Vista?
Operating system.
Yeah.
Or going with the XP 64. I understand. I have some old programs, the 32-bit, somewhere or another, I read that it's really difficult to get them to work with a 64, if at all.
Now, you know what? Don't run XP 64
because
driver support and hardware support for that is just not very good.
It's not as good as Vista 64.
I run Vista 64 now, and it runs great. And I run 4 gig and 8 gig systems.
If you have old legacy applications, you want to make sure they're going to work. Do some searches first to find out if people are having trouble with them. If they're not, most likely you're going to be okay.
I haven't had any problems running software in Vista 64.
Hardware.
I've heard about some hardware support, like scanners and printers. That might be an issue. But software, not that big a deal. In fact, you can right-click on an application and tell it to run in 32-bit compatibility mode, and that will solve the issue if there is an issue.
Okay, yeah. All right, that pretty much answers it. And on just out of curiosity, on the new operating system that Microsoft is supposed to be coming out with, have you heard anything about that, or is it worth the wait? Or
it's going to be another year or two.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and we really don't know what it's going to have. I haven't seen any stories that talk with any real data that talks about what it's going to have. I really hope they're going to have a next-generation file system, which means you're going to have to reformat your hard drives, take advantage of it. I'm willing to do that because I think the old NTFS file system is just old and busted. I mean, we really need some better file associations for searching. But, I don't know. Vista works fine for me. It is a little slower than XP in games. I don't know what else to say.
I wanted to push. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
Thank you. I wanted to tell you guys about a really cool service that I found the other day. My cousin sent it to me. It's jot.com, J-O-T-T.com. And it's one of those systems that allows you to record messages on the voice system and then use that by getting it to through email. So I'm going to call it right now. Oh, it doesn't look like I can do an outside line. All right, never mind. I can't do it on air live. We'll try it next week. But basically, jot.com is the service that allows you to record a voice message, and the voice message then is processed on their back end and turned into an email that gets sent to you or to someone else that you know. So you start up by saying, I'll do one right now as we're closing up the show a bit. I'll do it on my cell phone. You won't be able to hear it. Basically, you. Me. It's not going to work right now live, unfortunately. I don't want to hear it. But it's been amazingly good. You say something like, remind to look at a website, geekspeak.org, and I also want to call Miles later today. And then I'll get in my email inbox about 15 minutes later that message. Very cool system. And it's free. So we'll play with it again maybe on air sometime.
It's an 800 call?
It's an 800 call. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And you have to register your cell phone so that it knows which email to send it to. That's pretty easy to use. All right, was there any other news stories we didn't cover today?
Yes.
Miles, go for it.
Yeah, I have to bring back up my... You got me.
Oh, well, let's see.
XP is still killing Vista in sales volume, according to HP.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting.
And something else that goes along with that.
How is that possible if Microsoft's not selling it anymore?
But something that goes along with it. Well, Microsoft actually gave special dispensation to some of the larger vendors that they could still bundle XP with some of their machines, especially if customers were asking for it. But what's going on is that the majority of the HP machines are being sold with XP preloaded with a Vista business license along with it. So even though they're counting it toward Vista sales, a lot of these machines that are going out with so-called Vista installations are actually going out with XP.
So it's even worse than we think. Why are people doing this? Was it such a marketing fiasco with Vista that people don't think it's really bad? I mean, at this point, I wouldn't recommend someone buying a new machine with XP. I would recommend Vista.
There's like a stigma.
So many people complained about
Vista. I don't get it.
There was the early reports of XP played games faster than Vista did, that Vista was slower with that. Is that still
originally
true?
New DX10 games, there were driver issues. You know, certainly there were a lot of issues, but all that's been resolved.
Okay, Vista, they have been.
Vista's stable, it's almost as fast as XP. I mean, unless you've got a really extremely high-end system and you care about every frame rate, you may leave a couple on the floor if you're in Vista, but it's not that different from what I understand.
And the big reason for me to go with Vista, if you're getting a new machine, I wouldn't necessarily suggest upgrading, but if you're getting a new machine or if your OS is failing right now and your machine can take it, to go through the process right now of doing an operating system and not doing Vista just means that you're going to have to do it later on. I mean, just bite the bullet. You're going to have to move over at some point. You might as well do it now. That's kind of my experience. Unless your machine's working fine and there's no problems, in which case, well, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
All right.
Except for the fact that XP is not going to be getting security updates pretty soon and...
Yep.
GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. The geeks this morning were Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, and Ben Jaffe.
And Lyle Troxell.
Yeah, that's me. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. I'm Lyle Troxell, answering the phones today.